2 Samuel chapter 19, really just kind of reading through the book. It's chapter is rather self-explanatory. I like to look at the words, maybe enhance that a little bit for help, understanding perhaps things. But there will be something I've said a couple of times that needs to be corrected now. I see it more clearly, and we'll address that when we come to it. Always learning something better. We never have everything. I read somewhere, it might have been today, you know, we have a lack. We don't know all the Word of God, and we certainly don't know it like we ought, and we're always learning. It's just going to be that way. The Lord still uses His Word in spite of our weaknesses to help us. And, we don't want to err necessarily in especially important doctrinal matters, but even that, some of that is difficult. But here in the we are at the 19th chapter. Previously, David and all his men had come to the city of Mahanaim, and behind him followed Absalom as well, and they're preparing for war. And David divides his warriors, puts them under three main figures, generals of the army, if you will. Joab is the main man. He's the prince of the host, the captain, but by him is his brother Abishai and another Gentile proselyte, Ittai. So he's divided them up like that, very wise move. Absalom, on the other hand, has a family member, Amasa, and he alone is going to go to the battle, and they begin this conflict in what is called the Wood of Ephraim, in the forest there. And I don't remember, it was a number, 20,000, here it is, that died in this battle. But most of them died as a result of the what we call the natural hazards that were in the forest. But when Absalom saw the people of the other side coming against him, he fled on his mule. And you remember in that, he must have maybe been looking behind him a little bit, whatever it was, but he came into a thick oak tree, and he got his head lodged up in the branches of that, and the mule kept on going. And he's stuck and can't get loose from this. And word gets back rather quickly to Joab, who comes and kills him with his spear. I think it was three times in his heart, and then the others, his like 10 armor bearers, will go ahead and play with his body some, and they will take him down and throw him in a big pit and cover his body with a good heap of stones. At this moment, then Joab sends Cushai, a messenger, back to Mahanaim to bring word to David that the battle is over and that Absalom is dead. And this causes great grief to David, and he cries, "Oh, my son, Absalom, my son, Absalom, would God that I had died for thee, oh, Absalom, my son, my son." And so the narrative continues into the 19th chapter. David is still at Mahanaim, and he's mourning for Absalom, his son, who has been killed. It was told in verse 1, the report came to Joab, "Behold, the king weeps and mourns for Absalom." And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people. This great act of salvation was turned into mourning to all the people, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son, obviously his son's death. And the people, evidently returning from this conflict, got them by stealth that day into the city of Mahanaim. So they returned, and rather than there being a rather time of rejoicing and shouting and praising the Lord, there was really silence as they came into the city. as a people being ashamed, seal away when they flee in battle. So you have that contrast, what it should have been, but what really took place. But the king, it says, covered his face. And it's a very unusual word. It's only once in the Old Testament, but I think it has to do with the idea that David did not publicly show himself to the people. The king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, with a great voice that must have been audible for others to hear. Oh, my son, Absalom. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. So David had concealed himself from public view. And then Joab came into the house, evidently he got word of this, to the king and said, "Thou hast shamed," or otherwise confused, "this day the faces of all thy servants, them that went out to fight for you, which this day have done something, saved thy life." Now, and as we read this, you're going to see when it says lives, it's always the same Hebrew, nefesh. It's always in the singular. I just think it emphasizes the point. "Thou ashamed us this day, the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved or delivered thy life," your soul, "and the life of thy sons and thy daughters, and the life of thy wives, and the life of thy concubines," those that had come out with him. Remember, he had left 10 back to keep the house of the concubines. And so in that, Joab says, in that, by this show, in that, thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared, you're making a profession of sorts this day, that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day, I perceive, yada, I know, first person singular, verb, I know that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. That would have been right in your eyes. This is what you're communicating to everyone. Now, therefore, arise. Stand, another word. Be certain, another word, how it's translated. Arise. Go forth and speak comfortably unto thy servants, for I swear by the Lord, if you go not forth, there will not tarry one. Literally, there will not tarry one man, a man, with you this night. Go out and speak comfortably. Make an appeal to the hearts of these people. You've got to do something. This is very important. And that, if you don't, that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. We know that Joab and Abishai, they appear to have joined to David very early on, likely sometime during Saul's persecution. He's first mentioned, Abishai is, but the references to the sons of Zeruiah, so Joab is present very early. Remember that David is their uncle. Joab and Abishai are his nephews. So generally speaking, that tells me that they could be younger. Not necessarily so, but could be. Joab is mentioned as being a great warrior, as he fought in David's behalf against Abner, Saul's captain of the army. You remember that time when Saul's, actually his Ishbosheth, sent his men out and under Abner and David's men under Joab, and they came to this pool and they, let's let the men play. And it was a life and death kind of an issue, but they did that, and Joab and his men had routed Abner and pursued after for some time. We read those things just a little earlier, but Joab is seen from this point forward and is very likely heard of the experience of David, even under King Saul himself. So he's very aware of the circumstances then, and he's saying, if you don't do something, you thought that was bad, this is going to be worse. And so you must do something. So what's a wise man do when he hears good counsel? Now, let's just disregard this for a moment. What's a wise man do when he hears good counsel? He hears it. He doesn't let the messenger himself stand in the way of the truth of that thing that he's heard. Sometimes the messenger isn't the best one to give it, but he may have been the one the Lord sends to give it, and you've got to hear it regardless of the person. And that's very important for all of us to learn. It's a matter of prayer. We do pray that the Lord will help me to hear the wise counsel, whoever it is, the truth of the Word of God, irrespective of the person that he chooses to send my way to give it. I think this is critical and very important for us to be able to hear the right things of God, irrespective of the man and maybe the way that he presents the message. And I'm getting to it in a moment, Lord willing. But Joab isn't the best man for this message. He's not necessarily the best man, but David was able to hear it. Proverbs, his son, Solomon, David's son, said in Proverbs 1:5, a wise man will hear and will increase learning. A man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. And again in chapter 9, verse 9, give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. So what kind of men and women, sisters, brothers and sisters in the Lord, what kind are we? So David heard this, that Joab said. Then the king arose and sat in the gate. Now he makes his first public appearance since this. I don't know how much time has gone by, not much. But he heard and arose and sat in the gate. And they told unto all the people, I'm assuming all the people of the city of Manam, saying, behold, the king does sit in the gate. Because we have a reference to all the people. Otherwise, in other places, all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled every man to his tent. So I'm assuming when David made his first public appearance, these in the area came before David, especially of this city, Manam. And all the people were at strife. And best I can understand it, is they were quarreling. There was a quarrel throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying a couple of things. The king saved us. He has recovered us out of the hand of our enemies. And he has delivered us, as a PL verb in this case, so he has proactively delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines. And now he has fled. He's run away out of the land because of Absalom. And Absalom, so this is an ongoing strife among the people. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back? Why are you silent to cause the king to return? And it's some difficult to understand who ye is. But I'm just going to say that this strife and this quarrel is being said among the tribes of Israel, and they may be directing this toward his tribe, the tribe of David, of Judah. And maybe this is coming back to them, and they haven't been doing anything. And very likely, because they may have been, of all the tribes, all of them should be ashamed of themselves that have done this, but especially the tribe of Judah for having taken Absalom to in this treasonous act against their king. They turned to Absalom. And it may be why they were slow about this, to respond to what they were hearing all around them and coming back to them. But David gets the word. And so he takes, so to speak, he takes the bull by the horns and he begins to do something that needs to be done. And that is lead the people, be a king. So King David, in verse 11, sent to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, who were there in Jerusalem. So he sent word, very likely by those two messengers we read about earlier. So they quickly ran off, and David then sent them to these priests, saying, "Speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last in this effort to cause the king to come back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king?" I'm aware of what everybody's saying. Why aren't you doing something? Of all the people, you should be the ones to do this. Ye, verse 12, ye of the elders of Israel, you are my brethren. In a special way, they're all related, but you're my brethren. You're my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king? And also do this. Now, David is taking up, he's doing something. There's a strife going on, a contention in the nation. And he's trying to, after all of these terrible things have taken place, and the basis for this really is his crime that he committed some time ago with Bathsheba and against Uriah. This is all related. Those things could be all simmering, and then because of something that God alone can do this, and in some sin, which in this case David committed, now the Lord can release this thing to bring about all these results in David's life. And he's reaping what he's sown. It don't stop either. It's going to go on. This is the way it is in his kingdom from here forward. And this is part of it. Look, you're my bone and my flesh. Why are you the last to bring the king back? And do this. And what a statement to reconcile the people. And say ye to Amasa. Amasa, the son of Abigail. So Amasa is his sister's, one of his sister's sons. Very close in that respect. And so Amasa say to him, art thou not of my bone, very closely related to me, and of my flesh? God do so to me, and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab. Wow. Something's happened. Now, what a move on David's part to reconcile the men of war from 20 years old and upward, men of great strength, mighty men that evidently were under Absalom's rule and under Amasa's general leadership in the battle, to take that man and bring him to be the captain of the hosts of Israel's army for David and unseat Joab. I mean, this is really, really profound. And by that, he, David, in verse 14, bowed. And now, what did he do? He spoke to the hearts of the people. The wisdom of God to be able to do that. And the Lord turned this thing for him. He bowed. He caused to incline the heart of all the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man. They were united now to David. So that they, the men of Judah, sent word to the king, return thou and all thy servants. I want to back up just a moment about Joab being replaced by Amasa. And this was by the appointment of David. There are several reasons now for this. I'm of the mind that Joab has been a problem for David very early on. There are reasons to remove Joab, but Joab was a powerful man. But to remove him, he shed the blood of war in a time of peace when he killed Abner. That's a matter of fact. And Joab and Abishai are kind of, at least I'm getting this idea of them. They're kind of like, kill all opposition. Why put up with? You saw how they responded to Shimei. And they're going to do it again here in this chapter. Let me fall on him. Let me take his head off. So that was their demeanor. They're warriors, but unruly in certain respects. And Joab, he purposely defied the king's commandment not to kill Absalom. He purposely did that. Everybody knew what David said to them about, look, it was in the ears of all the people in the city. As Joab, Abishai, and Ittai went out of the gate of the city, everybody heard what David said to them, and he did it anyway. And then Joab turns around and gets on David's case because he's mourning over the death of Absalom. But Joab's the one that caused this whole thing. So all of a sudden David is appointing Amasa to take Joab's place. So there's some things going on here. In any event, David had bowed the heart of all the men of Judah toward him, inclined him as one man. So verse 15, the king returned and came to Jordan. And Judah came to Gilgal to go meet the king to conduct him, to carry him over the Jordan River. Now, a little word here about Gilgal. This is really good. Just a short word. Most of you are familiar enough with the Old Testament scriptures, and Gilgal is a famous place. It's the first city that Israel, after wandering around for 40 years in the wilderness, on the very day that they were delivered out of Egypt, on the 10th day of the first day of the month, Abib, 40 years later, they crossed over the Jordan and they come to Gilgal. And that was the day when the Lord rolled away the reproaches of Egypt from off of them. It took all of that time for this to work for them. Roll away the shame of the nation of Egypt from them. And here it is at this same place where this big act of reconciliation is taking place. The Lord is, there's actually a rolling away of the reproach of this treasonous, terrible, treasonous act by so many in the nation of Israel. And it takes place at, of all the places, Gilgal. So just to say that, in verse 16, and Shimei, we remember him, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, which was a Behurim. Make sure we understand that it's the same man. There's not another one. The same Shimei hasted. He made speed and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. When David had fled from Absalom, he came out a ways, and Shimei met him, throwing rocks at him and cursing David and the people with him. And he's throwing dust in the air. He looked like a nut, but that's what he did. And he cursed David and those with him. And now he's the first one to come and meet the king here. Very important. And again, there's some conciliation here. And notice, there was 1,000 men of Benjamin from this tribe with him. It doesn't say that he was with the 1,000, but it says the 1,000 are with him. To what extent they are, I don't know. But it does seem like he's kind of brought them down and is saying, look, the issue's settled, and it's going to he's going to repent for what he's done, and he's wanting David to forgive him. But from the appearance of it, Shimei is a very powerful man in this tribe. But having these 1,000 men with him is not a show of force, but it's rather a show of reconciliation. to settle this matter, to lay it down low. And you see that, and it does, but it mentions that also with those thousand that are with Shimei and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and 20 servants with him, and they went over Jordan before the king. And there went over a ferry boat, a very unusual word, and we just have to leave it like that, a ferry boat to carry over the king's household, those evidently maybe closest to him, and a great show of honor, perhaps, and to do what he thought good. And so we come back to Shimei. Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was come over the Jordan and said unto the king, let not my lord impute iniquity. Don't count that I did earlier against me. Neither do thou remember to be mindful of it, of that which thy servant did perversely, wrongly, the day that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. So he's asking for forgiveness of his sin, that David would not consider it at all in the way that he had wronged him. Now, for thy servant doth know that I have sinned. I've caused offense. Therefore, behold, I am come the first day, the very first one of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord, the king. And so we're looking at this phrase of the house of Joseph, and it can refer to the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, Joshua 17, verse 17, but the phrase appears to be a reference here to a dividing line for the southern tribes and the northern tribes. In Joshua chapter 18, verse 5, well, we'll read this verse. I referenced Joshua 17:17, referring to the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. But this begins to be a line through the tribes, dividing the north from the south. Here in Joshua 18:5, and they, certain men that were selected to survey the land and finish getting it all laid out so that Joshua could part it out to the different tribes that haven't settled yet. And they shall divide it into seven parts. And so we're looking Benjamin, Simeon, Issachar, Zebulun, Asher, Naphtali, and Dan were remaining. Now Judah shall abide in their coast on the south, and the house of Joseph shall abide in their coasts on the north. So it looks like a line dividing between the north and the south. And Shimei, in effect, if this is so, is saying that among the northern tribes, and yes, there are 2.5 on the other side of the Jordan River, but that they always seem to be counted with Israel, the northern tribes. So Shimei, in effect, possibly saying, I'm the worst offender in all of Israel, and this lays the matter down. In verse 21, so all the north is square, and now the south is as well. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? And there's a biblical reason for saying this. You're not to rail on the anointed one of the Lord, which would refer to either the high priest or the king. Thou shalt not revile the gods. Exodus 22:28. And we've studied that. You should realize that that refers to princes and judges of the people. Nor curse the ruler of thy people. But not only Shimei, but all the thousands and thousands. If he's worthy of death, how many more are because of their treasonous act for joining with Absalom, So if he punishes Shimei, he should probably punish everyone else. But we go on. Verse 22, and David said, what have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah, that ye should this day be adversaries? And you're so contradictory to what I'm trying to do here. There shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? And so David spares Shimei and obviously everyone else. For do I not know that I am this day king over Israel? I'm the king, you're not. Therefore, the king said to Shimei, thou shalt not die. And the king sware unto him. And Mephibosheth, the grandson of Saul, the son of Jonathan, came down to Jerusalem to meet the king, and had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace. So Mephibosheth came down to Jerusalem after David had been escorted over by the tribe of Judah over the Jordan River, and they brought half of them across there, and then went and took those with David on over to the city of Jerusalem. And here is Mephibosheth, and he comes out evidently during this time. He's not eating at Absalom's table, and there's no king. He must have gone either outside of the city somewhere or back to Benjamin, and now has, upon hearing that David has returned, has come down to meet him. And you notice this, that he had neither dressed his feet. He had done nothing with his feet. Usually you would wash your feet, keep them clean, trimmed up all of that stuff. And he hadn't done that. He hadn't trimmed his beard. It's pretty obvious. He's telling the truth about this, and had not washed his clothes from the day that the king departed until the day he came again in peace. Now, I don't know how long this went, but it was probably over several months. And I was saying that you can't tell who was telling the truth. And I'm reading this now. It's like, wait a minute. You can't fake that. He really has been, in a way, mourning for David all this time. And the evidence is his appearance. And so Ziba's the one that misrepresented, slandered, as Mephibosheth will say here. I had not done that from the day that the king departed until he came again in peace, to Jerusalem. And it came to pass when Mephibosheth was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, why wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? And he answered, my lord, O king, my servant Ziba deceived me. He betrayed me in a way here. For thy servant, referred to himself, Mephibosheth, said, I will saddle me an ass that he may ride thereon and go to the king. In other words, he was going to have Ziba saddle his ass, get it ready for him to go, but instead he took off and left him stranded. And that was because he was lame. And he has slandered thy servant unto my lord the king. But my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right therefore have I to cry any more unto the king? So Mephibosheth gave a report why. He answered David why he did not come out. And the king said unto him, why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, thou and Ziba divide or part the land. The land of the concern is that land that was Saul's in the tribe of Benjamin. But it looks to me like maybe to settle this, maybe some contention here, he parts the land between them. I'm not quite sure. Verse 30, and Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all, forasmuch seeing as my lord the king is come again in peace unto his own house. I don't care about that stuff. I'm just glad you're back, that everything is well here. And then there's another man that, an ancient man that came from farther up north and gave a lot of aid to those with David, Barzillai. And Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogelim and went over Jordan with the king to conduct him over Jordan. That was his only thing that he wanted to do, was to see the king over the Jordan River. He wasn't looking for a reward or anything. This was what he wanted to do. And Barzillai was a very aged man, even 80 years old. And he, to remind us, had provided the king sustenance while he lay at Maanaim, and while he was there at his dwelling place at this city. For he was a very great man, great in substance, and great in age. And the king said to Barzillai, "Come thou over with me, and I will feed you. I will sustain you with me in Jerusalem." And Barzillai said unto the king, "How long have I to live?" One interlinear I use, it says, "For what are the days of the years of my life?" What's left? I'm 80 years old. And really, at this time of day, that's a pretty old man. That I should go up with the king to Jerusalem. I am this day 80 years old, and can I discern between good and evil? And it seemed like, can I appreciate the differences there are between things that are good and bad? You know, I don't feel the finer things of life. Those sensations are gone. My mind can't discern between those. Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? It doesn't matter if I eat at my house or the king's house. It's something that just fills my stomach. I don't taste this much anymore. Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women? So he's saying the evil days are on me. That's how Solomon called them in Ecclesiastes 12. The evil days have come. And a number of us are here where we've come into the evil days. And I know it's like here we are, and sometimes we're like surprised. I went for a walk for the first time a little while back. It might have been last week. And the walk put my back out. And I need to actually work this muscle down in here that does the, because of the little bit of a hill there is going up to past my brother's house. There was a pool. And so we went yesterday, and I woke up this morning and said, "Well, yep, there it is." I said, I've got to be walking more. But things begin to fall apart. And as you read Ecclesiastes 12, it's clear. And why am I surprised? Good night. I've got family, and it's one after the other. They're dying. I think in the last couple of months there have been three. And my uncle died in 22. My dad died in 23. My aunt died of the same month, February this year, and two more uncles within the last 2 months. And you're going to hear more and more and more. And we're here. And it's our turn. The evil days have come. Then that means bad days. Oh, yes, we can rejoice in the Lord. We have peace with God and all of that. But the body, it's falling apart. And he says, what good will this do me? I'm too old to have that. But he thought about someone that was younger. Verse 36, thy servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king. And why should the king reward me with such a great reward? Let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again. Let me go back home, that I may die in my own city, be buried by the grave of my father and my mother. But behold, thy servant, Kimham, maybe it's his son, I'm just assuming it is. Behold, my servant, Kimham, let him go over with my lord the king. And again, he did not come over here to receive anything. Let him go over with my lord the king, and do to him what shall seem good unto thee, that which is good in your eyes. And the king answered, Kimham shall go over with me. and I will do to him that which shall seem good unto thee. Now, we don't know if Barzillai said anything about what it is he could do for Kimham. There's nothing said. He may have simply just allowed David to do what he felt like he wanted to do. But he did give him over to do whatever seemed good. And whatsoever thou shalt require or choose of me, that I will do for thee. And all the people went over Jordan. And when a king was come over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned unto his own place. Then the king went on to Gilgal, just a little further up from the river, and Kimham went on with him. And all the people of Judah conducted the king also, and also half the people of Israel. And we had mentioned that earlier. And then after so many crossed over the Jordan, Judah and they continue on to Jerusalem. Now, there is one thing about Kimham. It's such a great thing to have the search engine for your Bibles and for your programs, and so you can type in Kimham. I wonder if he shows up anywhere else. And of all the things, this is once more, and it may give us a little insight. If it's the same person, which I have no reason to think that it's not, Jeremiah mentions him in about chapter 41, and it's a place just close to the city of David. Remember, there's two cities called the city of David? Jerusalem's one, and Bethlehem is the other. Just near to Bethlehem, and it may be that David gave him a parcel of property over there to have, and it was called Kimham, this area, this place. So, verse 41, and behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away? And it brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan. Basically, it didn't tell us about it. And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is next of kin or near of kin to us, why then be ye angry for this matter? Have we eaten at all of the king's cost? We did this of our own volition. Well, there was nothing we gained from it. This was something we did. Had he given us any gift? The answer is obviously no. And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 parts in the king. We have more tribes in this northern consideration than there are in the southern consideration. With Judah, there is the tribe of Simeon. Simeon's lot is inside of Judah's lot. And so there are the two down there. And we got 10 parts in the king. He belongs more to us than he does to you. So what's going on here? And we've also more right in David than you. Than ye all do, or you all in the southern vernacular. Why then did ye despise or slight us that our advice should not be first had in bringing back our king? And the words of the men of Judah, as the dialogue evidently continues into the next chapter, 20th chapter, were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel, which again, David is in so many respects receiving a judgment for his crimes against the Lord. And this is that part of it. The sword shall never depart from your house. And so no sooner has he got this matter settled that it springs into another. And now he's got to get that quelched. And so they're going to go to fight against some of the brethren, a faction in the nation. That's the 19th chapter. Thank you for your attention.